peace still. But I'm from Taipei.
That was the Illinois-based singer-songwriter William Fitzsimmons from his most recent CD called Gold in the Shadow. In fact, I actually have the bonus CD. On the main CD, there's a slightly different version of that. I like the acoustic version. The song called Bird of Winter Prey, heard here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Good afternoon. I'm Kevin Kelly. Thanks for joining us for the program today. And on today's show, we'll be talking about two different theatrical productions, both of them opening this week. Coming up, I'll be talking with and we'll be hearing from members of the Champaign-Urbana Theater Company's 22nd opening show of the 22nd season, which is the musical How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. It opens tomorrow, runs through Sunday at Parkland College Theater. And we'll be having a live preview of some of those songs. But first, a production that's happening in Charleston by Charleston Alley Theater. It's their 23rd season. So these two organizations have been around just about the same length of time. And their show opens on Friday and continues through the 25th at Charleston Alley's own theater. It's virtually a one character show and therefore a one-man show, virtually because, not exclusively that, but pretty darn close, as we will find out. And we have that one man with us. His name is Duke Bagger. He's one of the, I think I read, one of the remaining founding members of Charleston Alley Theater, so has been involved with him for all of those 23 seasons. Thanks very much for joining us on the program.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and we are kind of proud. It is our 23rd continuous season, and we are, and always have been, a volunteer company. So it's not every day that you have an all-volunteer group that manages to stay together that long.
Well, and then continue to give shows without a commercial break, as it were.
That's
at least not an interruption, which especially in these days of difficult funding can be a challenge. Even though you have volunteer companies, that doesn't mean there aren't expenses involved.
True, and we are kind of blessed and cursed at the same time in that we hold the mortgage on our own building. So we can choose what goes in, when, and for how long. But then on the other hand, it is a 100-year-old building.
And if
so
there's a mortgage,
we have to maintain that.
And if there's a mortgage, that means somebody has to pay the mortgage.
Absolutely. And we intentionally stay small. We stay at a 40-seat house, and that way we are able to do shows where we feel that they should be done. But we also don't expect large audiences to come see them. But we do offer them anyway, and if they come, terrific. They get a special experience.
So since you were involved in the founding of the company, just let me ask briefly, what was the impetus for that, as you remember? And was its part of its mission always to do sort of off-the-beaten-path plays, such as the one you're doing right now?
Our founder, Tanya Wood, was very active in local theater, but she wasn't able to choose the scripts that she really, really wanted to do. So ultimately, she bought the building. And when she bought the building, she brought me on as technical director. And our entire mission is to do the shows that other people either won't or can't do. We do Durang. And Christopher Durang is known for being rude, crude, and socially unacceptable. And he offends everybody, which is why we love him. No matter what your politics, no matter what your religion, no matter what your philosophy, if you don't leave offended by something, Durang feels that he has failed. Well, these are something that there, people in that area just are not going to experience. And so we produce those programs. We also try to be as community involved as possible. So we do staged readings and do we've done an evening of Gertrude Stein's poems. We did an entire series of women writers from the roaring 20s. We have done the readings. There's a memoir group in Charleston where people sit down and they write their memoirs. And they find that they're doing it in such an amusing way that we stage their memoirs. Mm. So we're closely involved with the rest of the community. We have a house band that goes out and plays for benefits in the community. So we try to be as involved as possible. We also realize that there's a financial end of it, so we will do shows where we feel that we can get a large audience. But once again, we do it with the shows that nobody else is going to touch, like the Rocky Horror Show. And when Frankenfurter is standing right in front of you, it's a whole new experience.
Not if he's at a distance on a screen or
there
something.
There is no distance at all. No, he is right there in front of you. And last year we did Reefer Madness, the musical. And this year we're doing The Bat Boy. Well, these are shows that, say, Eastern or the community theater are not really able to do. And so we do them.
The Bat Boy, I think, if I remember right, is one that Parkland College did not. Well, it's been several years, and I did get to see that. That was really off the beaten path show. That was fairly hilarious, if I remember. I think it's the same show.
And so is Reefer Madness, the musical. I mean, they took the movie and just they really made fun of a movie that pretty much makes fun of itself.
Makes fun of itself, yeah. What's been your involvement in theater? I mean, you indicated you were brought on with Charleston Alley Theater as technical director. But other than that, what sort of things have you done? And how did you end up doing this basically one-man show?
I have been involved in entertainment since I was 8 years old. That's over 57 years ago. So I was entertaining on stage for a majority of those years until I wound up doing technical theater as well.
And let's just ask, entertaining how?
I had a one-man act. As a child, yeah. As a child, I was a cute little kid with a great big accordion. And my parents would farm me out to bar mitzvahs and weddings, and the accordion was larger than I, and it had to be put on a stool because I was too small to hold it. And I hated it. I loved performing, but I hated the accordion, and ultimately wound up buying a guitar and a chord book, and I taught myself a few chords just as folk music was coming in vogue. So I played bars and coffee houses as essentially a folk singer. Then I got into acting and designing, and I have designed, I was a roadie for a while in the 60s, and I have designed lights and special effects and sets for theater, for rock groups and that sort of thing. And I just have just always felt compelled to be part of it. I had worked with Tanya before on a couple of shows, and I had known her since the 1960s. In Charleston, you were not a student at Eastern Illinois University in the 60s if you did not know Tanya Wood. And I had worked with her and been friends with her and her husband for years. And when she bought the building, she walked me down the alley, and we looked through the windows of a garage door, and it had been a Firestone tire store. And she said, I bought the building. I said, good for you. What do you plan to do with it? And she said, well, I'm going to make it into a theater. And I said, Tanya, this thing is tiny and it's full of junk. How the hell are you going to put a theater in here? And she said, I don't know. You'll figure that out. And I asked her how I got involved with this. And she said, well, I need a technical director and you're the best. So there we go. And as a result, I have worked professionally, and she had worked professionally, and many of us who started the company were professionals. And we decided not. It's not that the industry decided. I went to a war, and that kind of changes your perspective on things, and so I no longer really wanted to do that. But I did want to stay in entertainment, so this was just a perfect fit.
The show is called, which I think I have failed to say so far, that Charleston Alley Theater is putting on, starting Friday, is called Mistakes Were Made. Did I say that at the outset?
Oh, no.
No, I didn't. Yeah, I didn't. These mistakes are made on this show every day. And it seems like that this character of Felix Artifacts might be sort of tailor-made for somebody such as you, described here as an exhausted, fast-talking, second-class, I don't mean to suggest that you're second-class, theatrical producer, beaten by the splendor of his ambitions. Why don't you give us a bit of an overview of this play?
Well, essentially that's it. He's it's like trying to herd cockroaches. He has all these different people with all these different very firm ideas of how this particular play should be done. And the wheels just kind of fall off the cart at every direction, no matter how hard he tries. And ultimately, it does end with some hope. Of course, you don't want to give away the ending, but it does end on a more hopeful note. But yeah, he's always been producing the off Broadway moldy chestnuts, as he calls them, and he's really hoping that this is going to be his big break on the Broadway stage. And our founder's son, Tony Wood, is a friend of Craig Wright's. And Tony sent me an email saying that this was a play that Craig had written, and he said this would be absolutely perfect for you, Duke. And so on Tony's recommendation, I put it on our calendar for this season. And then I contacted Dramatist Play Services, and I got the rights. And then I got the script, and then I read it. I didn't realize it was pretty much a one-man show until I had actually read it. So a little bit of panic came in, but I have been studying it religiously for the last month, and I'll be ready.
There are a couple other characters, one of whom is a fish.
Yes, Denise is my pet fish, and she is a puppet. And she is operated by Jeffrey Augenstein, who is the puppet master on it. And so she pretends she's swimming, and her mouth opens and closes, and I pretend that I'm feeding her. And I can't even do that right, and I ultimately wind up killing the fish. So there's very little that I'm able to get done. Very little I'm able to do right in
so
the script.
So a puppet fish is harmed during this play.
Indeed, yes. No real fish were harmed, but a puppet does come to a sorry end.
So that much we do know
indeed,
about this.
Yeah.
And you have a secretary who I'm guessing is never actually seen, but she's on a speakerphone?
She's pretty much on the speakerphone, and at the very end of the show, she does come on stage. So she does have a few moments on stage, and I was lucky enough to Jackie Armstrong has done, I think this is her seventh show with us. And so I was lucky enough that she agreed to do this show. And by and large, she talks through an intercom backstage. And since we didn't have one, we have walkie-talkies, and I hide a walkie-talkie in a box and make it look like an intercom.
And much of the action actually takes place on the phone.
Almost all of it. Almost all of it is with a phone in my hand, or I pretend I've got a mobile device in my ear and I wander the stage talking to people on the phone and popping prescription drugs and drinking alcohol. And of course, the prescription drugs are actually Tic Tacs, they're actually Tums. Yes, they're Tums. So
that should control some other
indeed.
Issues that may make.
They look like they come out of a prescription bottle, but they're actually Tums.
We're talking about Charleston Alley Theater's production of Craig Wright's comedy Mistakes Were Made, which opens on Friday and runs through the 25th of March. Weeknight shows, or rather the. Except for Sundays, the shows are, which days are the, which days
Friday,
are the afternoons?
Friday, Saturday, and Monday are at 7:30, and Sunday matinees are at 2.
Sunday matinees at 2 o'clock. And I think you brought along a scene or two that we can have a sample of
what
this show sounds like.
Yeah. In this particular scene here, I'm trying to get the playwright who is actually in the heartland, much like Craig Wright was when he started his career. So I don't know how autobiographical this is from his point of view, but Stephen Nelson, the playwright in this show, wants to get out of the heartland. So I am asking him, he doesn't want to change it. So I keep asking him, so then just say it's possible. Look, just say, Stephen, just take a good deep breath and say, Felix, I hate you. I hate this idea. But like gravy on cake, it's possible. Well, listen to me. You want to get out of the heartland, right? You want to come and live in New York and the West Village with your wife and child and brunch on Sunday mornings with the stars? You want your name and lights and your Pulitzer? Well, then listen to me, Stephen, my little principled friend. You can make a lifelong shining career right now. A candlelit path through the dark woods of life so that at the end, when you step out into the open field with the wet grass on your toes and the sun coming up, you can dig your own grave in the soft brown earth and lay down smiling and saying, I did it. I did it, Dad. I had a career. And you know what? Let's be honest for just a second. Maybe it won't be a good play by the time you're done trying what I'm suggesting. Maybe you're right. Maybe it'll become generic. Maybe it'll become negligible, abysmal. But maybe, Stephen, just maybe it'll be great. But the thing is, and these are words to live by, kid, you don't know until it's doomed, you don't know it's doomed until you do it. Now, I've had shows I thought would be disasters run for 7+ mediocre years. And I've had shows I thought were gems drop like pancakes from the back of the pony and turn to dust in the summer sun. There's no way of knowing what'll work. And so he's trying like crazy to convince this poor young man to do this, and the poor young man ultimately says, sorry, goodbye.
And so, I mean, that seems fairly straightforward. Reasonable sounding talk for a play. This is described as absurdist.
Yeah, well,
where does that come in?
He has all of these different things coming down, right down to the point that he has 10 guys in brand new trucks with 1,000 sheep in the desert in the Fertile Crescent. And they're facing an entire revolutionary group of jokers, as he calls them, with flamethrowers and very passionate ideas about progress. And so he's dealing with things not just with a playwright in the heartland. He's not just dealing with actors in California. He's dealing with these people in the Fertile Crescent. And with a Belgian woman with whom he entered a partnership in a, God help me, $1,000 a night hotel room in Brussels. And she has disappeared, leaving him to hold the bag. So just how everything can go bad all at the same time is really kind of an absurd way of looking at things. And I suppose it's kind of a comedy in the way that, I don't know, Chekhov looked at The Cherry Orchard as a comedy, too. It does have its moments that I think could be amusing, where he just seems overwhelmed all of a sudden. So it'll remain to be seen if people see this as amusing or if it's they're all going to see the whole thing as something that's moving along at a breakneck pace over which no one has any control. I'm just kind of hoping I do over the character.
Well, and just briefly, challenges of preparing a one-man show. I mean, since you said you weren't quite aware that that's what you were getting into when you agreed to do it.
Yeah. Oh, that in itself was a challenge. And since we're small, we use and reuse. So I'm also still the technical director, no matter what show we do. So I designed and we built the set. And I'm also the master electrician, so I've been doing some theatrical wiring while I'm doing it as well during the work calls. So the whole thing has been somewhat of a challenge on every aspect of it, from backstage to onstage. And I must say I'm rather pleased. I'm pleased with how it looks. I'm confident and, shall I say, quite hopeful that I live up to Craig Wright's hopes and our hopes and aspirations for this production as well.
Are you directing yourself also?
Yeah, pretty much. My wife is sitting out there in the front of the house, and if I'm doing something that just doesn't look right or isn't playing well, she'll tell me. But by and large, this is not the first time I've directed myself on stage. I've done it with Richard III. I did it with Shylock and last year in Merchant of Venice. So I'm kind of accustomed to reading the stage while I'm also on it and acting.
Well, it sounds like a pretty significant task for you, you know, to do all these things at once.
Being a control freak, yeah.
Well, there you go. So maybe you're really in your element. Duke Bagger is in the role of Felix Artifacts in the show called Mistakes Were Made. It opens at Charleston Alley Theater in Charleston on Friday, continues through March 25th. You can get more information and the complete schedule by going to their website, which I failed to write down here. So that is
www.charlestonalleytheater.com, and it's theater with an R-E. And you can click on the link that says Mistakes Were Made in the upper right-hand corner. And you can call for reservations at 217-345-2287. Leave your name and the number of tickets and the performance you want on our answering machine and a contact number so we can get back and confirm your reservation. We are all volunteers, so we're not always there to answer the phone. So we will get back to you and confirm your reservations. And it's a fairly reasonable price. We just go across the board for $10 a piece. We can make accommodations for those who are not able to pay, but we hope you do come to see it.
Well, I certainly appreciate your coming up, and letting us know about it here on Live and Local, and best of luck and break a leg, as they say.
Well, thank you, and thank you very much for this opportunity. It's very much appreciated. Thank you.
It's my pleasure. I'm Kevin Kelly. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. Stay tuned next for our preview of another theatrical production happening in our area. Champaign-Urbana Theater Company is presenting the musical How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. Our broadcast today is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, breathing life into the history of our nation's musical past through exhibits, guided tours, and performances at the University of Illinois. More information is available, and visits can be scheduled at 217-244-9309. Amy Stock, why don't you give us a little bit of the briefest thumbnail of what's happening with the company at the moment and what's going to happen this season and why this show, in that order.
What's happening with the company is we are moving forward with a new plan, a new vision for what CUTC wants to be in the community, which is the community resource for theater, not only for four major musicals, but we're working on our workshop series where we'll be an educational source for the community for everything from scene study to improv to musical theater for young kids. Also, we are planning a second season. If that happens this year, great, but it is in the works. A second season of smaller, more ensemble pieces that will be held in more intimate places. We're going to continue with our murder mystery series, which are going strong, and with our resurrected singing Valentine series, thanks to our lovely company members here. And what was the other thing you asked me? Why this show? How to Succeed in Business? Well, it's a fun show. It's a very tongue-in-cheek look at the rise up the corporate ladder. It's actually based on a book written in 1952 by Shepard Mead called How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. And it's all about the journey of J. Pierpont Finch as he reads the chapter of the book and climbs the next rung of the ladder until he's possibly the chairman of the board.
So the book itself, neither a comedy nor a musical.
No, it's a straight book. It was a straight, like, New Yorker-style, tongue-in-cheek written book with great cartoons in it, great caricatures, and the character names are exactly the same. Finch and Gatch and Mr. Bigley and Hetty LaRue, and it's a really fun little book. And so what they did, and which is why this musical is so different, is that it is a fully scripted musical. There is a lot of dialogue in this script, and then it's balanced out by the musical numbers and the dancing numbers. But of all the musicals that I know personally, this is the one that has the most dialogue in it and the most scenes.
So when you say fully scripted, it simply means that there's a lot more
there's a lot more talking.
Things going on without without songs.
Right.
Interrupting things.
There is a lot more character development, a lot more story development through the dialogue and not as much through the actual singing of the songs.
Well, we had a feature, I guess it's been at most a couple of weeks now, on My Fair Lady, which the University of Illinois put on, as being one of the earliest shows, if not the earliest show, where a lot of the action takes place in the songs, as opposed to having songs that sort of interrupt the action.
Right.
And somebody stands there and sings about how much they love so-and-so or whatever. The songs for this show also further the action?
Yes, I would say definitely they further the action, because with the dialogue build-up to the song, and then the song completes the dialogue of the scene, in essence, so that you are, yes, you're advancing the story through the song and through the little tidbits in between.
Any idea if this is the first or among the few musicals that actually is based on this kind of a book? I mean, there's a lot of musicals that, you know, is based on a story or...
Right. Well, a lot of musicals are, well, the first one was Showboat that I can think of, and that was the musical that turned the tide of musical theater and made it more, less of a variety show and more of a story through song kind of thing. And then we have Spring Awakening, which is based on a book, and then this particular book is a very sarcastic view, but it is an actual book based on someone's idea of rising up the ladder.
I believe this did win a Pulitzer Prize, though.
The book itself?
Yeah.
Oh, good. I didn't know that.
The show.
Oh, the show, yes. Yes. The show won a Pulitzer Prize.
We have to distinguish here. Because, I mean, every musical has a book.
Right.
Which is
written for the musical.
In this case, is not the book on which the book is based.
No. Are you following along?
No, I'm not really. So the book came out first in 1952, and then... It was such a popular little book that 2 years later, they took it, A. Burroughs and Frank Lesser, and they commissioned the actual musical. But they didn't change much from the book. I actually read to my cast. I opened up one rehearsal by reading the first paragraph from the book, and it is the first opening monologue of the show.
Okay, so the monologue being given by this character, J. Pierpont Finch, or by somebody called a narrator.
One of the characters, quote unquote, of the show is the voice of the book, which when Finch reads his book, you hear him, you know, reading this book out loud, but it's not Finch's voice, it's the book voice.
Who is actually, may I put a plug for the person who did our book voice? It's actually Josh Laskowski, who is a popular DJ in the area as well, and he did the book voice for us. So
Ron,
it was a lot of fun.
I noticed that in the new Broadway cast from which I just played the overture, that it was Walter Cronkite.
Wow.
Yeah, how do you like that?
That would have been cool. That would have been cool, too.
Anderson Cooper did it as well. Anderson Cooper did it in the Daniel Radcliffe version.
This is the more recent.
It was Anderson Cooper.
Well, it was just fun. I mean, Josh gave a real good selling spin to it, which is what you need to have. This is a book on how to sell yourself up the ladder.
There's a number of famous early self-help books. Is this a serious self-help book?
No.
I mean, it was completely
No, it really isn't.
Everybody's shaking their head in the room.
I remember going to the Urbana Public Library one time, and then they had from the same author, How to Succeed at Tennis was one of the books I saw up there. I'm going...
That's not serious either?
I didn't read the book, but I'm just like...
If so, I'd like to get that. My tennis game is not very serious, so I might as well read
the
a book like that.
The actual subtitle of How to Succeed in Business is A Dastardly's Guide to Getting Ahead.
So it
doesn't sound very serious. No.
Well, we have some songs from the show we want to preview. We're talking here with members of the Champaign-Urbana Theater Company's production of one of two shows this year that have really long titles, How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, and I nearly said the other one. In fact, I nearly wrote the other one in my promo for the show, A Funny Thing Happened in the Way to the Forum. That's going to be at the end, and in fact, the guy who's playing Pierpont Finch is directing that show, which is to say Matt Fear, whose voice you just heard.
Which explains why we're all being really nice to him as well.
So you think you'll get cast if you do well on this one. That's the voice, by the way, of Ray Essick, who plays the character of Bud Frump. Maybe before we launch in the first song, quick review of the characters who are here. Quick overview of the characters
you
who are here.
You guys introduce yourselves. Start here. Right. Start
here. I'll introduce each of you, okay. And then you can introduce your character. So I think first is, you're Ray.
This is Ray. Mm-hmm.
So that voice earlier was of David Laker. Sorry about that. So Ray in the role of Bud Frump, which is a wonderful name.
Yes. Bud Frump is every bit as nice as his name sounds. He is the whiny, sniveling nephew of J.B. Bigley, who is the president of the company. And Frump doesn't let anyone in the company forget that he's the boss's nephew, and he's taking early lunch. He's going to get the promotion. He's going to get the raise. And not surprisingly, no one in the company likes him.
I was just going to say, I already don't like him.
Yeah.
Just from that mini description. And then we have Jenny Gleason in the role of Hedy LaRue, which sounds like a not very well disguised impersonation of a famous actress.
That is not far off. The character of Hedy LaRue is described as the office bombshell. So what I've been kind of thinking is, you know, small brain, large assets. So she is very often in revealing clothing and is playing a lot of the characters through her womanly wiles. So it's a big character. It's a fun character. Lots of bright colors. Lots of sassy lines. So
sort
it's been a,
a
lot of fun.
A far cry from another character you played recently, which is, say, Marion the Librarian.
Yeah, like pretty much the polar opposite of that.
Of Marion. And then we have Liz Martin in the role of Rosemary Pilkington.
Yes. Rosemary is Finch's love interest in the show. And in the very first scene that they meet, she decides that he will be the man that she marries. She sees his potential. And as a, you know, stereotypical early 60s secretary says, okay, I'm going to marry this man who's going to rise up to the top and be a successful businessman. And we're going to move to New Rochelle and have a white picket fence and a house and a bunch of kids. So I try to make sure that Rosemary's character has a bit of an edge to her so that she doesn't make feminists out there nauseous.
Beat you up.
Right. But, I mean, deep down, she really does end up falling in love with Finch. And
can you blame her, though?
How could you not?
And then we have Jessica Miller is in the role of, if you have a last name, I didn't write it down, Smitty.
Yeah, it's just Smitty.
That's it, huh?
Yeah. She's Rosemary's friend and who also works in the office. And she's kind of, she's there for Rosemary and doesn't want to see her get hurt through her ambitions.
She gives me a hard time like any good best friend would.
Tries to keep you in line.
Mm-hmm.
And David Laker as J.B. Bigley. So we had a little bit of a introduction earlier, but your notion of your character.
I described it the other day as a toothless shark, somebody who's forgotten where he's been. Bombastic, gruff, but has forgotten. He's so used to the perks of the business world, including a mistress.
Hello.
That's
me.
He's just forgotten everything else. Two people are too busy kissing up to him, polishing the apple, so to speak, and okay, fine. I'm great. Let somebody else take care of it. And he's forgotten it. That's all.
So that all works as far as you're concerned.
Exactly. Is the business going? I'm doing great.
And then Matt Fear in the, I guess, the lead. Is
yeah.
That, you know, J. Pierpont Finch.
He's the guy on the poster.
For don't
some of the posters.
Man, it's
yeah, Pierpont Finch, J. Pierpont Finch. He's the one that is trying to succeed in business without really trying, and he's the one that starts out as a window washer, and he's got this book, and this book he begins to follow each of the steps of this book, and it works for him like a charm, and he goes right up the ladder.
The Worldwide Wicket Company.
The Worldwide Wicket Company. Yes, they are the leading manufacturer and distribution of wickets.
And a wicket is?
A wicket is whatever you want it to be.
That's about all
and
we know.
And if you want it two-toned, we can do that.
And we have two-toned wickets as well.
Which is not to be confused with a widget.
Not a widget.
Not a widget.
No.
Which I still have not figured out.
No.
Not owning an Android, I guess. Okay, so we've got some songs. What's first and what's the setup for it?
The first one is It's Been a Long Day, and this is the first song where we see it's 5 o'clock, everybody's leaving from work. Rosemary's been after Finch, and Finch has been kind of shy to let her in as a romantic interest. So we're at the elevator, and Smitty's in the middle, and she knows exactly what each of them are thinking, but they're too afraid to turn around and say it to each other until the end. And this is the first rather love song that we get to between the two.
From How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying.
Well, here it is, 5 p.m. The finish of a long day's work. And here they are, both of them, the secretary and the clerk. Not very well acquainted, not very much to say, but I can hear those two little minds ticking away. Now she's thinking,
I wonder if we take the same bus.
And he's thinking,
there could be quite a thing between us.
Now she's thinking,
he really is a dear.
And he's thinking,
but what of my career?
Then she says, then he says,
well, it's been a long day.
Well, it's been a long, been a long, been a long, been a long day.
Now she's thinking,
I wish that he were more of a fort.
And he's thinking,
I guess a little flirting won't hurt.
Now she's thinking,
for dinner we could meet.
And he's thinking,
we both have got to eat.
Then she says, then he says,
Kazuntite.
Thank you.
Well, it's been a long day.
Well, it's been a long, been a long, been a long, been a long day.
Say, there's a yummy Friday special at Stouffer's. It's $1.90 vegetable plate. And at the bottom of the ad, not bad, service for two, $3.58. To make a bargain, make a date.
Wonderful.
It's fate.
Now she's thinking,
what female kind of trap could I spring?
And he's thinking,
I might as well forget the whole thing.
Now she's thinking,
suppose I take his arm.
And he's thinking,
oh really, what's the harm?
Then she says,
hungry?
Then he says,
yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, it's been a long day. Well, it's been a long, been a long, been a long, been a long day. Well, it's been a long, been a long, been a long, been a long day.
Okay, from the Champaign Urbana Theater Company's production of How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, which opens on Thursday and runs through Sunday at Parkland College Theater, we just heard in the role of J. Pierpont Finch, Matthew Fear, in the role of Rosemary Pilkington, Liz Martin, and in the role of Smitty, Jessica Miller, and at the piano, Tommy Howie. He's been on this show numerous times, mostly for when he was in productions in high school.
Yeah.
I didn't know he played piano.
I do, yes.
Well, apparently. Yeah, it seemed to be just fine.
Thank you.
If you want more information on the show, by the way, the web address for the Champaign-Urbana Theater Company is simply cutc.org, and you can get tickets there and make your reservation and check out the upcoming shows and so on. But, of course, they're interested in selling you something for this one before anything else. Next song.
Next song is called Heart of Gold. And all through the musical so far, we've seen Bigley being, you know, big blustery, and Hetty being her lovely, dynamic self. And we know there's something going on between them that's a little illicit, shall we say. But during this song, they reveal to each other that both of them are quite sensitive, and they find that in between all of the, shall I say it, relations between them, there is actually some sort of feeling between them as well, even though it's, you know, doesn't know where it's going or why, but it's kind of fun. It's a nice little reveal to each other, as well as being a very insinuating type of song. So all under the guise of a lovely waltz, this is called Heart of Gold.
Now, don't you start getting sincere. That's not fair.
Where will I find a treasure like the love from a heart of gold, ever trusting and sweet and awaiting my pleasure? Rain or shine, hot or cold, wealth far beyond all measure, maybe soon in my hands I'll hold. Ah, but where will I find that one treasure of treasures? The love from a heart of gold.
I never knew you felt that way.
Nobody knows but this, but I'm extremely emotional.
So am I. Where will I find a treasure like the love from a heart of gold, ever trusting and sweet and awaiting my pleasure? Rain or shine,
hot or cold,
wealth far beyond all measure, maybe soon in my hands I'll hold. Ah, but where will I find that one treasure of treasures?
The love from a heart of gold.
So even the sexy characters can have some little sentiment going on in their souls, I guess.
Well, yeah, even sexy people have souls.
Every once in a while.
So Jenny Gleason in the role of Hedy LaRue and David Liker in the role of J.B. Bigley from How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. Amy Stock is the director. And, you know, I have to say, this is a show with which I'm almost completely, well, I think I am completely unfamiliar. I've never seen it. I don't know that I've probably will recognize some songs, but I haven't so far.
Okay.
I saw that this won, what, 7 Tony Awards, something mm-hmm. like that.
Mm-hmm.
So...
I believe the original one,
with Robert Morris, who is the, you know, kind of created the character of Finch.
Yeah, it was, and I noticed that the show is as old as I am, 1961.
Yes.
So what do you think makes this such a good show?
It's popular because I think it's a very cartoonish look at the business world, which everybody always likes to take a rib at some point or another. But I think it's because the book was so popular in itself, and it was very funny. And then the music is very catchy. Mm-hmm. You may not come away, you know, you may not right now remember a song from the show, but boy, once you leave this show, you're going to be singing them all, and they're going to be running through your head as you drive home. It's very catchy, very lively, very fun. And as I was telling my cast before we started, this is a true big Broadway musical in that it is a very full-bodied, very just lots of songs, lots of singing, lots of dancing. And as I said before, the dialogue, there's quite a bit of dialogue in this. And in the early 60s, musicals, a musical evening was a full night. And then by that I mean it was probably, it started at 8 and ended at 11:30 and everybody loved it. It's just a rich, very textured, very fun kind of musical. And it's fun to revive. And the fact that Daniel Radcliffe did it on Broadway heightened it a lot, I think. It doesn't hurt. But I think anybody who picks up this show is going to find just these tunes are so catchy. And the dance numbers we have, beautifully choreographed by Whitney Hayvice, just wonderful dancing. And Andy Hudson, as our music director, has just found some lovely little tempos that we're all working with. And it's just a fun show to work on.
Well, I'm enjoying the songs so far.
Well, good.
So. And ours isn't 3.5 hours long.
No, of course not.
You said 8 to 11:30.
Well, no, that was like, back whoa. In the 60s. Back when Broadway musicals were at their peak, that was expected. That was the night of theater. And recently, we get into this kind of movie mindset almost, that where we go to expect a play to be out in an hour and a half, and we're good with that. But this isn't a time when Broadway was at its peak, and the musical was the thing. And when we do it, a musical from then today, you got to go with that idea in mind. Kind of put yourself back in the 1961 night of going to the theater and going to see this really lovely musical and a lot of fun.
Back when attention spans were longer.
Yes, yeah. That was a long
booze way. Booze more freely.
Yes, that's true too.
Is what it was.
Yes, that's probably true as well. But we don't do that at Parkland Theater. It's a lovely theater. Lovely theater, great acoustics, not a bad seat in the house. It's a wonderful space.
Which is true, by the way. They say that about shows, you know, not a bad seat in the house, and there's always a bad seat in the house, but not at Parkland, in fact.
No, not really. Not really.
Not even if you're way out on the wings, I don't think.
Well, see, I don't care to sit in the front row. I like to sit back. That's where the experience is. That's where you get the whole picture. If you sit in the front row, first of all, you're going to have our pit orchestra, which is in the front. We took the pit cover out, so the orchestra is right there with us. So if you sit in the front row, you're going to be kind of woo, blasted, but yeah, it'll be a lot of fun.
All right, so the next song.
The next song is Finch's signature song. This is called I Believe in You. It starts off in the washroom, the executive washroom, with the other male executives kind of lamenting the fact that Finch has risen so quickly to the top, and they're really concerned that he's going to take over their job and they're going to get fired. So the first part of this song, sung by Ray as Bud Frump, kind of reflects the male executives going, kind of got to watch this guy. He's after our jobs. And then in comes Finch, and he's getting ready for his biggest presentation as advertising director, and he's in the mirror trying to convince himself that, ooh, I got this. I've got this, Finch. I got your back. So it's a very interesting song in we see a little bit of Finch's self-character revealed. It's called I Believe in You.
Gotta stop that man, I gotta stop that man cold, or he'll stop me. Big deal, big rocket, thinks he has the world in his pocket. Gotta stop, gotta stop, gotta stop that man, that man.
Now there you are. Yes, there's that face, that face that somehow I trust. It may embarrass you to hear me say it, but say it I must, say it I must. You have the cool, clear eyes of a seeker of wisdom and truth. Yet there's that upturned chin and the grin of impetuous youth. Oh, I believe in you. I believe in you. I hear the sound of good, solid judgment whenever you talk. Yet there's that brave, bold spring of the tiger that quickens your walk. Oh, I believe in you. I believe in you. And when my faith in my fellow man all but falls apart, I've but to feel your hand grasping mine, and I take heart, I take heart. To see the cool, clear eyes of a seeker of wisdom and truth. Yet there's that slam, bang, hang reminiscent of gin and vermouth. Oh, I believe in you.
In the role of J. Pierpont Finch, it was Matthew Feher, who was the second one singing. The first one singing, Ray Essick, in the role of Bud Frump, and at the piano, Tommy Howie. This is from Champaign-Urbana Theater Company's production of How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, directed by Amy Stock. It opens tomorrow at 7:30, with shows also on Friday and Saturday at the same time. Sunday matinee at 2:30. They're all at Parkland College Theater in Champaign. And for reservations, you can visit cutc.org. I want to say thanks to all who were with us, including also Jenny Gleason as Hedy LaRue, David Laker as J.B. Bigley, and Liz Martin as Rosemary Pilkington, also Jessica Miller in the role of Smitty. Amy, thanks for bringing everybody in.
Thank you. Thanks for having us. It's always
Thank
a joy
you.
To come out and sing
Thanks.
In the show.
And best of luck with this production and with the rest of your 22nd season.
Thank you.
I'm Kevin Kelly. This is Live and Local. On our evening concert tonight at 7 o'clock, it's the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center, featuring Robert Schumann's piano quintet and works by Brahms and Joachim. At 8 o'clock, it's the 2012 Gilmore International Keyboard Festival. Pianist Laurie Sims will play the complete Goldberg Variations by Bach. The Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center and the Gilmore International Keyboard Festival starting tonight at 7 on the evening concert right here on FM 90.9. Some other events you can see and hear live in our listening area over the next few days. Tonight at 6 o'clock at Bentley's Pub in downtown Champaign, it's Jammin' Jimmy Bean and Friends, an acoustic experience. In just a few minutes, in fact, at the Iron Post in Urbana, it's Parkland Jazz Improv, followed at 8 o'clock by Old Number 7 playing bluegrass. The Mark Morris Dance Group is at the Krannert Center in Urbana for shows tonight and tomorrow at 7:30. Tomorrow at 7:30, also at the Krannert Center, is the 21st Century Piano Award Competition Concert at the University of Illinois, John Nichols composer and pianist Tatiana Shustova. The University of Illinois No. 3 Big Band will be at the Iron Post in Urbana tomorrow evening at 7. Ms. M. and the Jokers will be at Bouvon's in Urbana tomorrow evening at 6. Community Players Theater in Bloomington present To Kill a Mockingbird tomorrow through Saturday at 7:30, with a Sunday matinee at 2:30. It's Elaine Romanelli and the Flower Jacks, part of the CU's presentation of the CU Singer-Songwriter Collective. That'll be at Clark Bar in Champaign tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. And in fact, Elaine Romanelli will be on tomorrow's Live and Local, performing for us live. Some Irish music by SMC will be at Dublin O'Neill's in Champaign tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. I'm sure there's lots of Irish, well, I know there's lots of Irish music in our area as we come up on St. Patrick's Day. Richland Community College is presenting Marrying Terry in the Schiller Auditorium on the campus in Decatur, 7:30 Friday and Saturday, Sunday matinee at 2 o'clock. Todd Snyder will be at the Castle Theater in Bloomington Friday at 8 o'clock, and I believe that Chicago Farmer is opening up for him. The Shanties play Irish music at the Knights of Columbus in Bloomington Friday at 7 o'clock. And it's Black Coffee Fridays, playing bluegrass at Donnie's Homespun Pizza in Decatur Friday night at 9 o'clock. And you can check other calendars for all kinds of things going on throughout our listening area. This is 90.9 WYLL FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music and more for Central Illinois. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. I'm Kevin Kelly for Live and Local. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned in just about a minute for All Things Considered from NPR.